Wait, no. My name is Jack Day. I am 16 years old. Today is November 26, 2017, and I am speaking with my grandfather, Gerald Day. We are in Vestavia, Alabama, in my home. Tell me about where you grew up and what your childhood was like.
Well, I grew up in Marion, New York, which is upstate. It's right south of Lake Ontario. And I was born and raised on a crop farm, as opposed to a dairy farm. Dairy farm with cattle and cows, and ours was a crop farm with celery and onions, potatoes, that sort of thing. I was quite loved by my mom and dad. I had two sisters, but the biggest thing of about being on a farm is work. When the sun is up and it's the summer or this growing or harvesting season, and you had light, you worked. So the biggest thing that I got from my youth was the ability to work hard.
What were you like as a child? What did you look like, and how did you like to spend your free time?
Well, of course I was cute, because I still am. And my mother thought the same thing, and so did my two sisters. I was the youngest of three children in an agrarian society, so having a boy for work and to carry on the family name was very important. A tad naughty, I used to play some tricks on my mom. I don't think I could get it. If we have time, I'll tell you a couple.
Oh, but we got time.
My favorite is the beet story. We grew beets. And they were red, quite red, and they were quite juicy. And we stored them in the barn sometimes in the wintertime. And we had a bunch of them in storage. And I heard my mom coming to the barn. I saw her coming to the barn. And so I quick cut a beet open, and I smeared it all over myself, my hands, my face. So she came into the barn, and she said, "What's the matter?" And I just told her that I hurt myself, and she was almost beside herself because my face was bleeding, and she was always trying to keep me cute and take care of me. So she carried me, I was about in fourth grade, she carried me almost to the house, and I started laughing so hard I couldn't help it, and she realized that I was just teasing her. I think it was the only time I can remember when I was under 15 or 16, where she was mad at me. Okay, so the crazy things, but not malicious, not mean, not destructive. But if you were born and raised on a farm or have any farm experiences, you would know some of the things you can get into.
Tell me about your siblings. Were you close with them, or?
I was close to both of them. Of course, you. You learn to love your people, your sisters, your mom and dad, and it's just a way of life. But my older sister, we bumped heads a lot. I don't know why, but we'd get in big arguments. She now is a doctor, and she's a very intelligent woman, and very successful. And of course, we love each other more than we ever did when we were kids. And my younger sister is a nurse, and that fits her personality. She's a wonderful kid, always taking care of people. So I had a great family. I had great siblings.
And what about your parents?
Well, my parents, mom spoiled me rotten. She was a hard working woman. She did all the cooking and all the cleaning, and maybe if we were out on the, it's called muck, that farm is, the dirt is called muck. It's black earth, very rich, and it's for growing vegetables that grow under the ground. We were out there early, and she'd follow us out about an hour later. She'd weed onions, weed celery, basically what she would do, because, you know, that she didn't do strength things. She would work maybe, let's say, from 8 o'clock to 11:30 in the morning. Her and a neighbor woman would weed together, and then she'd go in and make lunch and then come back out at 1 o'clock and work till 5 and go in and make supper. So, I mean, she was just a working woman, tough, and took care of her kids, loved her kids. But hard life. My father, he was a tough man. My sisters always say he wasn't nice to me, but he taught me to be tough, and he taught me how to farm. I could have had the farm when I grew up, or I could have went to college. He gave me half the farm. That was the opportunity I had, because he really wanted me to stay on the farm. But he wasn't a taskmaster, but he was like one step lower than that.
Tell me some of your favorite work story. What is your favorite work story?
Well, I don't know if there's any favorite work stories on the farm. There's always farm stories. I'll give you an example. There's one ditch that goes through. We had 24 acres of workable. It's like a big garden, and we had a big ditch going through that.
Irrigation.
Exactly, irrigation ditch. But in the late summer, after pumping out of it, it got a little sparse of water, and the polywogs, tadpoles, they turn into frogs, and there's a few snakes running around in it. There's a big board. It's like a 2x12 board that would go across the ditch. We got to get to the other side. You don't always want to go all the way around. It's quite... Okay, so anyway. We were going across it one day to lay some irrigation pipe on the other side of the ditch. So I went across it, and my dad says, "Jerry, be careful, because that board is getting a little bit rotten. Just take it easy." So I went across it, no problem. And my dad went across it, and it broke. And he went in that ditch, and he is covered with toads and all sorts of seaweed and all. I couldn't stop laughing. So he finally got out of that ditch. And fortunately, I was fairly athletic, because he took off after me and he couldn't catch me. That incensed him even more. So, I mean, I still think about that. We laugh about it all the time. We used to, but my parents aren't around anymore. But there's hundreds of stories when you work on a farm of things that happen. But in short, Dad was a tough man, but a loving man.
Mm-hmm. Quick side note, were there any ever sick days on the farm or anything like that?
No.
If you had the high temperature, was there you just eat a hearty breakfast and you just go back out, or is it you get babied a little bit more?
You get, you didn't get, if Mom was there, she'd baby me, but Dad wouldn't. When I was a kid, and now I'm driving tractor, I'm probably 10 years old, 11 years old, and I'm plowing and dragging and disking and working out in the field, and I can remember getting sick. I had walking pneumonia. They'd take me to the doctor, and I just would get sick and bend over the fender of the tractor and keep driving. Yeah, there's really no sick
days.
The only time that I really was, my dad was burning ditch banks. Because off the main ditch, there were these little ditches that you needed to have. And they could overgrow with weeds. Well, Dad was burning them to get the weeds under control, whatever. And the smoke, I got kind of caught up in the smoke. Well, they had poison ivy. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was allergic to poison ivy. And I got it all over my face and on my chest. I laid still, perfectly still, and couldn't move. I couldn't move my neck because I was so caked with it. They were afraid for me that I was that serious. So, yeah. if it was like that, yes, I got cared for. In other words, I wasn't just out there using, being abused. Okay, that's enough farm stories because I got hundreds of them.
What's the main lesson that your work life has taught you, or farm life has taught you?
The main lesson that my work life has taught me? Well, you can be successful if you work. Work ethic is number one. It's the biggest thing that I try to pass on to my children. And I wasn't really successful. And by successful, I mean graduate from college, get a good job, until I really applied myself. And that gets into all aspects of life. I'll probably hit on that a few times if you want to keep going.
Okay. So did you like school? Why or why not?
I liked school because I didn't have to go work on a farm. I liked school because I loved to play baseball and soccer, and I was pretty good at both. And that's where, of course, I played high school sports. Now that's sports, that's really not school, but it's an important part of school. I liked math and science, especially math. And in sixth grade, I knew I wanted to be a math teacher because I was very successful in helping my classmates. A lot of times they didn't understand things, and they know that the period after, or the next period after that, when we had a study hall, we usually had a study hall about period four, that they could come to me and I would sit and explain things to them. I found that very fun to be able to help somebody. So I knew then that if I could, I'd be a math teacher. Work ethic, 100%, and math science. History and English, not so much. And that played out in later years, college. I was okay in history in college because I had a really good colonial history teacher at college, and I got kind of turned on to the whole thing about that. But being that I didn't like English, it's affected me my whole life because now I read much slower. I have that book over there. I read now just to practice, because I'm not like you. I know you're a tremendous reader. I'm not, and I wasn't because I didn't like it. Shame on me. I didn't work at it, and it hasn't helped me at all.
Okay, so as a teacher, you also got to coach, and I know you loved coaching and sports and that. Yeah. So what was your favorite part of being a coach?
Watching my team outwork other teams, and they did. And we worked hard. We talked about that. We had a lesson or two weekly. We never got beat because we didn't work hard enough, though. I will give them credit. We got beat because the other team was better. My favorite part of coaching were the kids. I have two boys, but I coach girls basketball and girls soccer. I coach girls soccer because I played, and we started the program in 1980, and they needed desperately. I was coaching the boys at the time, the JV boys, and they asked me to take the program and the girls. We had a really nice first year, and the girls asked me to stay, and so I did. And they were fun kids, hardworking kids. And when they didn't work hard, and the parents kind of stepped in 20 years, 21 years later, like in the year 2001, they started having too much to say. And I'm an old school guy. I do my own thing. That's when I finally retired from coaching. I can't coach under somebody else's rules. Not when I've been running the show myself. So, but the kids were definitely my favorite part of coaching.
Do you have a favorite story or just really fond memory of coaching?
Just some of the fun things we had together as a, with my assistant coach. He was very good, and the kids loved him as well. And we had fun at practice, especially in basketball. Basketball is a great sport to coach because the practice is really fun. You can make basketball practice really fun. But we just had good kids. We had one kid, we call her the Rocket, because she was so fast with the ball. So it was fun. She would drive to the basket. And, well, the next year, we got a little point guard. Tomoko, her name was. And she was so quick. We called her the Missile. The Rocket, the Missile. That was her nickname. And my assistant coach, he always was telling them to go to the basket. So one day she's dribbling out on the point, Tomoko was, and he yells, "Go by!" And she just went like a missile, choo, right to the basket. And I mean, we just laughed at it. That was so funny. And she's so cute. Yeah. She would hit a three-pointer from the corner, and she'd do a little bow, you know. So it was just the kids. It was always the kids. They had so much fun with it. We were successful. But, you know, when we got beat, we were okay with it, as long as we didn't get outplayed. Okay, enough about my sports. I could go on for that for hours.
Okay, so as a vet, what was the toughest part of serving in the military?
For me, it was the very first duty assignment, which was Parris Island, South Carolina, boot camp. I was a little bit of a wise guy, as you probably figured out from some of the stories I have been telling you. Not disrespectful, but when I got down to Parris Island, and they just drilled me. I mean, they just were disciplined beyond my wildest expectations. I had heard stories, but I didn't think it was going to be quite as bad as it was. We're not going to get into a whole lot of Parris Island stories because there's a bunch of those too. But I wasn't happy to be there. I didn't enlist in the Marine Corps. I was one of, I think they told us there was like 1,000 guys that were drafted during the Vietnam War that got drafted into the Marines. That's how seriously they needed them. So we'll leave that alone. I'll answer some other stuff. But okay.
So what would a typical day be in the service?
In the service or in Vietnam?
Vietnam.
I'd get up, shower. Let's say one of us would work from 12 to 12, midnight to noon. The other would work from noon to midnight. So let's just say I had the 12 o'clock noon shift. I had to be there. Shower. Fortunately, we had a mess hall. A lot of soldiers don't. A lot of Marines don't. The shower was always cold. We didn't have hot water. So it was a fairly quick shower. And then I'd go to work. I'd sit at in the bunker and answer the phone, which was usually from other units. We would record positions. Enemy positions, friendly positions, and kills, like how many people were killed in action.
How did you come to get that job?
I came to get it because I could type. In Parris Island, they had our IQs or whatever, our scores in high school. I don't know where they got them from, but. And then they asked if anybody could type and do anybody want to take a typing test. So I raised my hand and figured, yeah, it's something I could do if they need. Well, I did all right. And so from that, that was my MOS. It was to be in an office. Even though everybody's a grunt, everybody's a what they call a 01, 03, 11, a rifleman. That's what I ended up doing there. So when I got to Vietnam, they saw that on my record, and they sent me to a station where they needed a guy to do what I was doing. It was interesting. It was a little dangerous because we had to take the reports that we got, and every 24 hours, I believe, we had to change the, they're called shackle sheets, that's the codes, so we could talk over the phone about where the positions were, where the, you know, anyway, that ended up putting me in a helicopter every other day, which was not always fun. And I'd come back. Fortunately, I did come back and work some more hours in the bunker, and then I'd get relieved by my buddy. So that was a typical day for me when I was in Da Nang. Okay, so.
If given the opportunity, would you serve in the military again?
No.
Why or why not?
No.
Oh, why?
I didn't like it. I didn't like to be bossed around. I do not see the necessity at that time. Now, I don't know about in today's world. I did not see the necessity for being in a jungle and losing 55,000 guys. I don't respect our country for that reason. Whether it be Johnson, Kennedy, you can name whoever you want to name. And I don't know where the fault lies. I have a few thoughts about that. And you watch the PBS thing on Vietnam, that 10-part series, which is very good. It can make you very angry if you were there. I wouldn't go back, but if I had to, I would. See, there's no draft anymore. A lot of people went to Canada, but because I was brought up religiously, and the Bible says, it says in the Bible someplace about thou shalt take up arms for your country, I thought that, you know, that was the correct thing to do. Okay, so I did. Are we getting to an end here, or are we okay?
Yeah, we have okay, over so half time left. We have 5 questions left.
Okay, we have half the time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, good.
Mm-hmm. Are there any positive moments or memories that you like look it back on and you just think that they like really shaped you and like who you are?
Positive memories, positive moments. Well, I was successful in school in the fact that I felt educated, that I was getting a good education. I was successful because I had what I considered good friends. So I was okay to go to school. These are positive things that are not necessarily in school.
Anywhere.
Well, mm-hmm. The most positive thing that ever happened to me is when I got married to your grandma. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Paris Island tried to calm me down and Vietnam tried to calm me down. But your grandma ultimately was the one that probably kept me alive. So, and she also gave me 2 wonderful children. So, yeah, she's the most positive influence in my life. And I wouldn't have had the teaching career or the coaching career that I had without her, no question.
Can you tell me, like, what's the, like, life lessons that you've learned throughout?
Well, starting out on the farm and not having, being lazy, tolerated, I learned that the best thing you can do is just work hard. I found in recent years that even some younger people who have no idea, what they're talking about, want to correct me. I think the first time it happened, maybe about 25 years ago, the guy knew I was a baseball player in high school. He also knew I was a Marine. What was the third thing? The third thing was he was in my math class. And we were discussing something one day, and he said, "Listen, Mr. Day, anything you want to know about the Marine Corps, a baseball, or math, you just ask me, because I know." And I looked, and I gave him like a double take. I said, "I thought I was teaching this class." I mean, I said, "Really? You really think you know more about those three subjects than I do?" He said, "I think so." So anyway, that was what started me thinking that maybe I should question some of my students, that he would really say that, much less think it, to say that. Anyway, what was the question again?
I got life lessons.
Life lessons. I started realizing that when I was a senior in high school, and I had my 57 Chevy that my dad had bought me for working all those years on a farm. I outran him. I was supposed to be home. My curfew was at 10 o'clock. And I saw him coming down the road behind me. And I didn't think he saw me, so I just outran him to the farm, which is about 4.5 miles. Mm-hmm. And I pulled into the driveway in the farm. It's quite a long driveway. And I pulled behind the barn. And I ended up thinking it was a cop chasing me because I was speeding. And when I lost him, I said, "Well, I got away with one there." And it turned out that about 2 minutes later, my dad pulled in the driveway behind me. It was my dad. It was not a cop. And he came behind the barn. And he would normally yell at me. He just held out his hand. I put the keys in his hand. He never said a word to me for about 2 days. And I said, "Oh, there's a life lesson. Maybe when you're told 10 o'clock, you're home at 10 o'clock. If I'd been there at 10, nothing would have happened, but I want to stretch it, 10:05. And my dad didn't make excuses for me, anything. 10 o'clock was 10 o'clock. So that, I think that was my first real big life lesson into doing what I was told, when the person that told me had the authority to do that. Like my teachers. I did what my teachers told me to do. All right. I don't know if that was a good answer or not.
Good answer. All right, so thinking about families, like generations, they actually might hear this recording. Is there anything that you'd like to say, or any advice you want to share, or any story you particularly want to tell?
As far as generations ahead, my generations, is that what you were talking about? Mm-hmm. Well, like your father realized how hard his grandfather worked. You could tell by the size of his arms. He knew how hard I worked because I'd come home exhausted on the weekend nights because I had a 10-bar part-time. His teachers didn't make a lot of money when they first started out. He learned how that he got things, the family got things, because we were willing to work. Because I wanted to teach, I didn't want to do anything other than that, and I could afford it if I worked part time. I would hope that work ethic would carry out for generations, because that means my family is going to be successful for generations. I mean, your mother and father are both being doctors. You don't do that unless you apply yourself. I mean, I don't care how smart you are. You have to work hard if you're going to do that. Okay? Your dad's going to get up tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. He's working hard. Yeah. Both of your parents do, and both of your parents, they give you a lot, but I hope that you understand from where that comes from. You don't just aren't given it. You're earning it, and you respect the fact that that's why they work hard, because they love you. Yes. I hope that carries on, because that means you got a good, solid family. Excuse me.
All right, well, that concludes the interview. I just want to thank you for coming out here. I want you to know that you mean a lot to me and that you're an excellent source of inspiration and of how you came to the farm. You went through a lot in Vietnam and how you have still had enough to go on and pass your life lessons down to your sons and through your students and through the kids that you played ball with.
Well, thank you. That's good.
All right.